Hi everyone, great to be here. Actually, I'm at Curtin University over in Perth, and so I thought I'd be a lot closer to this conference because I'm staying in Melbourne at the moment, but actually missed my flight last night and ended up hiring a car from the airport last night and driving here all night and just getting in time for the conference. So I'm very glad I made it, finally made it here, and it's great to be in the critical animal studies environment. I really like these conferences. I went to one in 2011 in Canada. And yeah, I really like this conference as someone who's both an academic and an activist as well. What I like about it is even though we've all got our differences here, I think we've all got a shared agreement that we don't just have some vague interest in studying animals, we actually want to change things for animals. Even though we've all ideas about how that's done and everything, it's great to be amongst people who actually want to make change rather than just have this kind of general interest in animals. And the example I always give about this, I'm on a bunch of animal studies email lists, and one of them, an email I always tell people about is I got an email about clothing animals. And so I'm like, what are they studying? Are they studying leather, fur, wool? I'm not sure. And what I found out was that they were looking at studying the clothing animals wear in circuses. That's what their thesis was on. And so that is what I see as animal studies. And it's great we have critical animal studies that actually looks at why are the animals in the circuses in the first place, for example, rather than just kind of looking at animals for their own sake. So hopefully my research is relevant to activists, and particularly my topic today, the vegan activists. And I think whether we're promoting veganism formally through an organisation or just in our own life as well, just by talking to others, which I think is also really important, hopefully this is relevant for you. So this veganism enters the mainstream. So before I get started, I thought I'd just start off with what veganism is all about or where it came from. So all the way back in 1944, Donald Watson coined the term vegan and set up the Vegan Society after he was unable to form a non-dairy section of the Vegetarian Society. So they weren't happy about that. They liked their dairy, and that wasn't going to happen. So he thought, well, I'll start my own society. That's how we had the Vegan Society in 1944, and also the term vegan, because we had the term vegetarian, which kind of covered vegans, but it didn't specifically cater for people who not only didn't eat flesh, but also didn't eat dairy and eggs and these other animal products. So it started off in 1944 as a diet, basically. For someone who didn't only not eat meat, but also didn't eat dairy and eggs and these other animal products as well. But very soon after, 1951, just a few years later, they extended the definition not just be about a plant-based diet or a vegan diet, but to actually be beyond that. So considering issues like the wearing of animal products or animal experimentation in the products we buy and these kind of issues, going to circuses, rodeos, all these issues. So from 1951 onwards, so very early on, veganism became about much more than a diet. So that will be worth keeping in mind as I talk about the mainstreaming of veganism. We talk about the dietary aspect of veganism or this broader kind of philosophy, more all-encompassing. So I'm a sociologist, and so an important concept for me in looking at social movements is the idea of claims making. And so vegan advocates are an example of claims making. There'd be all kinds of claims making on, you know, boat people at the moment, human rights issues, environmental issues, but vegan advocates are one example of a group who makes claims. And we make claims about veganism, and if our claims are seen as true by the public, then our cause is benefit. Our cause of advocating for animals is benefit if the public accepts our claims as true. So what kind of claims do vegan advocates make? These are the main three which you'll see on pretty much any website, vegan advocates. So the arguments will be that veganism is better for the animals, for your own health, and also for the planet as a whole. So these are the three claims I'm going to look into which vegan advocates make, which if the public accepts these claims, it's going to benefit animals, it's going to benefit the cause of veganism. So I'm going to start off with veganism for animal rights. And what I've looked at in my thesis, I've looked at quite a lot of media coverage of veganism. And what I've seen over the last few years is the ideas, the arguments for veganism from an animal rights perspective, or at least a concern for animals, has gone from sort of small activist websites, which generally people only access if they're already interested in that cause, to a more large, undifferentiated audience, a more general public. So we're seeing these kind of ideas not just on kind of more marginal websites, but mainstream sources such as the BBC and The Guardian, journalist Victor Schoenfeld, The New York Times, philosopher Gary Steiner in the US, and also here in Australia, journalist Katrina Fox has had success in publishing articles promoting veganism from an animal rights perspective in mainstream sources such as ABC and the Sydney Morning Herald. And of course people say, oh, you know, big deal, there's a few articles, lots of people out there elsewhere on campus who aren't coming to this conference haven't even seen these articles. But I think it is very relevant because these editors who run these mainstream publications, they're quite aware of where the public is at. And I think the fact that they're publishing these articles about veganism shows that they acknowledge that the public's ready to talk about veganism. They're not necessarily going to go vegan. We know most people aren't vegan, but the people kind of know what vegan is and they're ready to kind of engage with the issue. So I think the fact that it's starting to get published in these kind of places is very important and significant. Another example of veganism for animal concerns being promoted is the Bobby Calf campaign by Animals Australia. So they ran ads in newspapers, in mainstream newspapers, but also it also got coverage in other mainstream outlets as well, this campaign on the Bobby Calves. And this is, I'll just play a couple of minutes. This is from the 7pm project on Bobby Calves.
Some other news that made us happy this week was the news that the price of milk was dropping to $1 per litre, and that was good for consumers. But there's another cost to milk production you probably haven't heard of. And just a warning that viewers may find some of the images in this story distressing.
It's the supermarket staple many of us consume on a daily basis. We each drink on average 100 litres of milk every year. But most of us don't give a second thought to what it takes to make it. A new campaign by Animals Australia hopes to expose what they're calling the secret of the dairy industry, the Bobby Calf trade.
Cows have to have a calf each year in order to produce milk. It's an inherent aspect of the dairy industry that these calves are being born and virtually all of the male calves are being disposed of. That's a secret that the industry doesn't want people to know.
Each year, around 700,000 unwanted dairy calves, known as Bobby calves, are separated from their mothers and sent to abattoirs in the first week of their life.
You know, it's been happening for years. It's exactly what's been happening in Australia on dairy farms for the 200 odd years that we've been in this country.
People can certainly make their own personal choices, that is, to avoid cruel products. And unfortunately, at the present time, dairy products are coming from a cruel industry.
It's been happening for 200 years, but I didn't know anything about this. No, it makes me think twice about milk.
I worked in an abattoir for a year after I quit uni, and I used to see the stress those calves went through, and I swore that I would never eat veal from that moment on, but I never thought about milk.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I love animals. I think they're delicious. But the idea of a five-day-old calf is a bit hard to get your head around.
And starving it, yeah. Mm. If you need any more information on this, the issue will be on our website and you can go there and just follow the links.
Time for a break.
So, again, I think an example where a central claim of vegan advocates as opposed to, I guess, vegetarian advocates who would include dairy in that, that kind of message is getting out to quite a mainstream audience and being presented, not just the animal's voice being heard, but people actually engaging with that issue. And that this kind of growing awareness of the problems of animal products beyond just meat to products like dairy might explain the growing interest in veganism compared to vegetarianism. So veganism is the blue line here and vegetarianism is the red line. This is on Google Trends. And the last few years, veganism has actually overtaken vegetarianism for the first time and certainly going up and up. So there's been growing interest in terms of search terms on veganism as opposed to vegetarianism, and also these letters here are main important news stories or significant news stories about it, and there's increasingly in the blue rather than the red as well. So there's been growing, possibly because of these claims, for animal reasons of all animal products, might explain this growing interest in veganism as opposed to just vegetarianism. But what's been most significant probably in terms of the rise of veganism has been the environmental and health claims. So probably most people know about this 2006, the UN report, or Food and Agriculture Organization, United Nations, reported that livestock caused 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And then a few years later, the World Watch Institute... Hello? Oh, wow. okay, a few years later, the World Watch Institute reported 51% of greenhouse gas emissions, and that was a much higher number, but that got much less recognition. But all the same, it's remained a fairly mainstream environmental issue since 2006. And we've also seen a changing language here. With back in 2006, we had a lot of talk about the environmental impact of meat and vegetarianism being the solution. And we've had a change in discourse here to more embrace the term veganism. And not only that, this is from The Guardian and a quote from the UN saying global shift towards a vegan diet is vital to save the world from hunger, fuel poverty and the worst impacts of climate change. So we're getting claims about the environmental benefits of veganism, but very separate to the animal organisations themselves, so the United Nations in The Guardian. And just to finish up, veganism for health. We've seen in terms of claims making, media attention is quite important, so celebrities can play a big role in getting this media attention. And we've seen a lot of celebrities embrace veganism, particularly for health reasons or particularly a vegan diet. So we've seen all kinds of people embrace veganism. And this is an article from Bloomberg Business Week talking about all these different people, CEOs, Twitter founder, hip-hop artists, and all kinds of people going vegan. And again, this appears very separately to the claims of animal advocates, so this could be perhaps similar to, people may know, uproars, not your typical tree hugger campaign, yet this kind of same message of veganism is for everyone, it's not a narrow stereotype, has been made in sources like Business Week and also the Daily Inquirer, talking about the vegan diet not new amongst vegan athletes, which is obviously a common claim made by vegan advocates that veganism, you know, can be strong and healthy and all these things. I'm going to play a video on Bill Clinton's success story in terms of a healthy vegan diet and his health improvement.
Someone we all know whose turbocharged appetite for fast food was matched only by his turbocharged personality, President Bill Clinton. He has made a big change in his diet. He is a vegan, raising the question if the first boomer president can press the restart button at the age of 65. What about the rest of the boomers? Here's ABC's Ryan Claiborne.
There was a time when Bill Clinton never met a Big Mac he didn't like.
I'm eating an apple fritter right now.
Hillary Clinton persuaded White House chefs to cook healthier meals, which kind of worked. But it wasn't until 2004, when he had triple bypass heart surgery, that Bill Clinton truly got serious about changing his eating habits. Then last year, with the goal of shedding 20 pounds for daughter Chelsea's wedding, he cut out all meat, as he explained to Barbara Walters.
For several months, I just essentially quit eating animal products, including dairy.
So it's mostly what, grains and...
I mostly eat vegetables, mm-hmm. fruits, and whole grain bread, and I just feel better doing it.
For more than a year now, Clinton has been adhering very closely to what's known as a vegan diet. Like a vegetarian diet, the vegan diet excludes beef, chicken, and pork. But the vegan diet goes even farther, cutting out fish and all animal byproducts, including cheese, milk, and eggs. What does it leave? Mainly fruits, vegetables, nuts, and grains.
He says that he's doing really well.
Cardiologist Dean Ornish helped teach President Clinton how to eat more healthfully.
Moderate changes weren't enough to help him reverse or prevent heart disease. So he began following more of a plant-based diet. In our studies, we showed that it could actually reverse the progression of heart disease. Within a month, we found that the blood flow to your heart can improve.
And yet, despite all evidence of its benefits, a lot of people still shun healthier food because it doesn't sound very tasty.
What would you say to people who think that vegan food is bland or tasteless?
They probably haven't tried it.
It's good?
It's excellent.
And not just tasty, but they say it also makes them feel better. And Bill Clinton agrees as he celebrates this milestone birthday today. The formerly corpulent former president says he's slimmer, fitter, and feeling more energetic, Diane, than he has in years. He says.
Are you intrigued?
I tried a vegan lunch and it tasted great.
So one lunch at a time.
That's a start.
For Ron Claiborne.
That's just a start.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, veganism has been talking about very positively for health, but there's no mention of any animal advocates. It's just the news story as it is promoting the health benefits of veganism. So just to sum up, when I talk about the rise of veganism, what has more been mainstream rather than veganism as that broader philosophy that I spoke about that came about in 1951, has more been the vegan diet that enters the mainstream. And that's because... Well, I believe because it's not so much been the animal claims, although they have got more recognition, it's particularly been the environmental and the health benefits of veganism. So Bill Clinton might enjoy the benefits of eating a plant-based diet, but there's no health problems wearing a leather jacket, for example. So he's not necessarily going to embrace this broader lifestyle. So I think it's a positive thing, but it'll be nice if it was the broader philosophy. So it's about standing up for all animals, not just those used for food. But in terms of summing up the claims making, claims made by vegan advocates have been increasingly successful, one, because they've received mainstream media attention, and two, because this coverage hasn't just reported on the claim, so it's not just a matter of the advocates getting into the mainstream media, which we saw in the Bobby Calf story, but also their messages, or very similar messages, are being promoted by the UN or by Bill Clinton or by sources quite separately to the animal advocacy movement. And then when we as vegan advocates make these claims, I think they seem a lot more legitimate because these sources outside the movement are making them. And just to finish up, there's my contact details, anyone wants to contact me. And also, people have probably seen me running up with my report. I'm recording all the talks and I'm going to get them up online. So the podcast I run, which covers animal rights and human rights and all kinds of political issues, I'll get the talks up there. So if there's any talks you missed or anything like that, you'll be able to find the link on that website in a few days if anyone wants to check them out. Thank you. Certainly got a lot of anecdotal evidence for that. I've heard of people going vegan, you know, for environmental reasons, for example, but then seeing the animal thing later, but I haven't seen actually any studies looking into that. So, yeah, only anecdotal that I know of.
Yeah. Yes.
On that point, the Humane Research Council does a lot of interesting studies, but I just haven't seen them do anything on that. But they do a lot of studies when people kind of make claims, they actually look into it and see whether that is the case or not. But sorry, on the question, yeah.
Apparently Patty Marks, who I think is reasonably influential, has been going around saying that if you can only do one thing, it should be to avoid dairy.
Yeah.
And the suggestion being that consuming dairy is worse than eating meat.
Mm-hmm.
What's that called?
What, someone who just excludes dairy for ethical reasons? Is that what you're saying? I've never heard of a term for that. And I think that's why, in terms of the Animals Australia campaign, their Bobby Calf campaign, even though it wasn't a vegan campaign, it was more just an issue focused on that specific issue, it has been, I think, at least, again, anecdotally, I've seen a lot of people commenting saying they'd gone vegan after seeing that story, because most people, once they give up dairy, there's the perception that meat is the ultimate evil. So I think once people give up dairy, they generally give up meat as well. So a lot of people were just kind of going, oh, I'm giving up dairy, and therefore giving meat. I've never actually known of anyone to not consume dairy for ethical reasons, but continue to consume meat. I haven't known of that as a thing. So maybe there's not enough people who do that for there to be a term, but I haven't heard of one.
Last question. Sorry. I realise you're taking a social movement perspective with your thesis. I wonder if you've taken sort of a critical media studies perspective, because there's a difference between the claims making and the newsworthiness that the media is projecting, as opposed to veganism or animal rights as a social movement. So just as a senior lecturer in sociology, I'd love to have a chat with you to just, if you're interested in looking at publishing it from it, and you probably have great supervision and curtain, but there's just different ways that you
Yeah, okay, thanks. Yeah, well, I'm actually very, very close to publishing. I'm just sort of crossing the T's at the moment. It's basically all written, but it would be good to get perspective. And I am, it is kind of one chapter I'm looking at this, but I'm also looking at, media framing and that kind of thing of live export issue and animal welfare and rights range and lots of other issues as well. This is a small part of it, but I'll definitely talk to you after for sure. Yeah.
Thank you. It's such a pity that you've been rushed. We have gone over time. We've got about 7 minutes instead of 15 minutes break, but we have to say thank you to him.